This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. When we hear the word Holocaust, we tend to think of Nazi Germany. But a local organization known as America's Black Holocaust Museum invites us to look at that word and concept in a different light. The museum was founded by Dr. James Cameron, a lynching survivor who dedicated his life to advancing the rights of Black Americans and preserving the history of this community. The head griot of the museum, Reggie Jackson, says the Black Holocaust isn't in the distant past. Instead, it's a part of our past, our present, and most likely our future. Jackson joins me to talk about our nation's past and how current events play into America's Black Holocaust. Reggie Jackson, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Joy. Thanks for having me back.
I think there's a lot of confusion over a variety of terms that we now almost exclusively use to reference World War II. And one of the biggest ones seems to be Holocaust, which is often just used to reference the systematic killing of Jews and other groups of people by the Nazis. But Holocaust has a meaning that extends beyond that. How do you define this term?
Well, you know, one of the things I don't think people understand about the word is that it's a very old word. It's been around for a long time, and kind of the original meaning was kind of defined by how the Romans and Greeks used to conquer people. So what they would do is they would, you know, have their armies beat you down, and then they would force men from those communities to join their army by basically just burning down everything that was left of your community. So it originally came into being as a word that described total destruction, usually by fire. And even the way that it's used to describe the murder of 6 million Jews during the period leading up to and during World War II, the Jewish community didn't use that word Holocaust for many, many years. And then it became popular, and that's the only word you typically hear people utilize. So it's an old word that can mean a lot of things in a lot of different circumstances. But I think depending on which community you're from, you're going to define it differently.
When we're talking about America's Black Holocaust, how are we using that word for the experience that Black Americans have had in the United States, really since before it was founded?
Well, you know, the way Dr. Cameron intended for the word to be used, the founder of the museum, just a little background on why he gave it the name that he gave it, I think, is really instructive. So in 1979, he and his wife, Virginia, went on a trip with their church to the Holy Land. And when they were in Jerusalem, they visit Yad Vashem, which is a Jewish Holocaust memorial there. And so as they were in the latter part of Yad Vashem, the last section that you would see at that time was a garden called the Garden of the Righteous Gentiles. And this was dedicated to the memory of all of those people from other communities outside the Jewish community that accepted and really helped to save the lives of Jews from the Nazis. And so they dedicate this memorial there to those individuals. And so as he and his wife, Virginia, were standing in that Garden of the Righteous Gentiles, he turned to Virginia and he said, "Virginia, we need a museum like this in America that tells the story of Black people and those freedom-loving whites that were along with us on our journey to find freedom and justice in America." And so that's why he came up with the name for the museum that he did. And so his mission was to simply tell the story of the lives of Africans and their descendants in this country, going back to the time when the first kidnapped Africans were brought to America in 1619, all the way up to and including things that are occurring in our community today, the continued racism and discrimination that we faced. You know, we tell people that it's an ongoing struggle, that the Black Holocaust is not something from the past. It's something that's past, present, and future as well, because these things are not going to be resolved in any short measure of time. They will continue to be a part of our lived experience for the foreseeable future.
Well, and that gets to really the questions I have about the movement that we're seeing right now and the many things that spurred this current movement. So when we look at America's Black Holocaust, what are some of the things that we include inside of that that have fed into this larger cultural movement that we're seeing right now?
Well, when you look back and you understand that there were 246 years that Black people were enslaved in this country legally, and part of the process of enslaving African people was to make sure that they stayed in their place. So there were patrols that were set up throughout colonial America in different colonies, Virginia, Massachusetts, all these different places, to control the enslaved African population. And these patrols were known as slave patrols. And eventually, over the course of time, as they continued to grow and develop, they became the first organized police departments in America. And that relationship between Blacks and police that was so bad back in those days has kind of continued, for the most part, unabated since back in those years when those slave patrols became police departments. The Black community has always seen the police in general as more of a force to control their community than a force to protect their community. And so when we think about those things, we think about what Jim Crow segregation laws did. You know, Jim Crow wasn't just about separating people physically. It was also about controlling the movements of Black people. And those laws and the way that the police were used to control Black people's movement, Black people's access to certain spaces was a big part of this continuing struggle that we have to this day. And obviously, over a long period of time, even after, you know, Jim Crow was seemingly defeated, we have had real issues between police departments around the country and Black communities. And when you look at the civil unrest that people refer to as riots throughout the 1960s in particular, what people don't know because they haven't studied those events is that almost all of those, you know, two dozen or so incidents of civil unrest that were studied by the Kerner Commission report showed that almost all of them were sparked by police activity of some sort. Police did something that really kind of set off the unrest within Black communities around the country, whether it be killing someone, beating someone, some type of ill treatment. And that's very similar to what we're seeing today. You know, the murder of George Floyd set off protests around the country, which in many respects are no different than the protests that occurred in Milwaukee after Dontre Hamilton was killed by a police officer, or after Ernest Lacey was killed by a police officer back in 1981, or what happened in Baltimore after Freddie Gray died in police custody, or what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, when Mike Brown was killed by police, and no different than what's happened in Kenosha with the shooting in the back of Jacob Blake. So all of these things are directly tied to the same issue, that we have an issue with the way police treat Black people. And, you know, it's one of those things where we have seen it so often, Joy, over the last 6 years or so, so many viral videos that have really sparked protests, that I think when the events with George Floyd happened, and also the news of Breonna Taylor, which there's no video of that, but the news of Breonna Taylor being killed in Kentucky, and also the event that led to the death of Ahmaud Arbery at the hands of white vigilantes who claimed they were, you know, making a citizen's arrest. All of those things kind of combined together to really spark something that's very unique in terms of the diversity of the people who are protesting. You know, we've always had white allies in this fight, but this particular time, the number of whites involved in the protests has grown exponentially. You know, I joke with people that when I heard that people were protesting in Fargo, North Dakota, and Salt Lake City, Utah, I'm like, well, that has to be white people because there's no Black people living out in those places, right? And so, you know, that's the big difference. But I think part of what's been lost in these conversations is that even though the protests started as a result of police activity, they have expanded to include systemic racism and all of the things that go along with that are really part of the conversations, are part of the things that protesters are asking for, not just reform of police, not just, you know, defunding of police and things of that nature, but they're asking for real work to be done to dismantle systemic racism and all of its ways that it works in our society, within our healthcare system, our criminal justice system, you know, our educational system. People are really demanding things above and beyond things related just to policing.
You know, for people who might have difficulty seeing these links, I think a lot of the time when we get into conversations about even the civil rights movement, but going back to slavery, there are a lot of people who say, well, that was the past. That happened long ago. But as you've pointed out in this conversation, a lot of the things that we're dealing with today are things that continually occur throughout our history. How do you connect these through lines for people who fundamentally can't see them?
Well, I think part of it is that people can't see them, and another part is people don't want to see them. You know, when people say that, well, you know, slavery was a long time ago. Why are we still talking about slavery? That was way back in the day, right? And I said, well, you're still talking about the Revolutionary War. You're still talking about the founding fathers, and they were a long time ago. You're still talking about the Mayflower. So if you can talk about the pleasant things about American history, how come you can't talk about the ugly parts that were a long time ago? And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to understand that we've all been cheated in our history classes. Everybody that goes to America's educational system has been cheated by our history being taught in the way that it is. And I understand why it's taught the way it is. It's taught the same way every country teaches history, to make people patriots and lovers of their country. And so you leave out all of the ugly parts. But what it does in America in particular is that it leaves deficits of understanding of how we got to where we are. And people can't draw the connections between this consistent line of discrimination and racism against Blacks that has never ended. It started with slavery, and it has continued through every period of American history up to and including today. There's been an unbroken line of racism. And just because you don't know anything that happened after the Civil War ended and the 13th Amendment was drawn up, and you don't know anything about that period up until Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat in 1955, that doesn't mean that bad things didn't happen to Black people. That just simply means most Americans don't know about those things, or they know very little. So people aren't able to think of Jim Crow as anything other than some ugly signs, and they don't, you know, have the ability to understand that, okay, there were thousands of people who were lynched. Most of them were Black. In public spectacle lynchings with tens of thousands of white individuals partaking in those and taking souvenirs such as photographs, body parts, you know, pieces of the lynching rope, bark off of the trees. All of those things are part of American history that you didn't learn in school. We learn about what people refer to as race riots in the 60s and in the 90s after Rodney King, but we don't learn about all of the race riots where white people were the perpetrators in the early 1900s, in 1906 in Atlanta, 1908 in Springfield, Illinois, all around the country. So when we learn American history in a way that we're supposed to, we're able to connect those dots ourselves. We don't need anybody to connect the dots. But because a majority of Americans, including myself, through our K-12 education and even through college, don't learn these things, then it's really almost impossible to connect the dots and understand that the vestiges of slavery are still alive and well because of the mindset that was created at that time, that Blacks were inferior to whites, and that whites, in many respects, still have institutions that make sure that Blacks are treated as an inferior community within our society. It's built into the systems and the institutions within our country. This racism is embedded in those institutions. It doesn't matter who's in the institutions, who's running the institutions. This idea is embedded, and so the results of those institutions, the impact is always going to be the same.
Well, and that gets to this question, you know, when we talk about the Black Holocaust and when we talk about what is currently happening in our country as being a continuation of this Holocaust, it's hard to imagine a future where we aren't still dealing with the remnants of this really baked into our system. Do you see a future in this country where we are able to reckon with our past in a way that we can move on from it?
Well, Joy, I have to be honest and say that I haven't seen a great deal of evidence that we'll ever be that particular America, that we'll ever reckon with the past, because we're still refusing to teach these things. We're still refusing to talk about them when we learn about them. We're still fighting against a system that doesn't want us to teach that part of American history. Just in the past week, you know, President Trump told the Office of Management and Budget to tell every federal agency that they're no longer allowed to have anti-racism training, that it's un-American. So here we have a system where we're fighting tooth and nail to raise awareness of systemic racism, to help to mitigate it in some way by teaching people these things. And we have a federal government now which will not allow federal agencies to talk about these things. And so as long as we continue to live in a society that refuses to acknowledge the errors of its past, refuses to acknowledge the ugliness, then you're never going to see changes happen. We could follow the lead of Germany, which said that we're not going to allow anybody who grows up in Germany to not learn about the Holocaust. We could learn from South Africa, which said we're not going to allow any child to be raised in this society without understanding the history of apartheid in this country, because they understand that you can't get past these ugly parts of your history unless you acknowledge them first. And America has never, ever in its history acknowledge these things. Generally, when they're talked about because Black people and Latinx people and Asian American people and Native American people have been the voices raising those issues to the forefront. We're not seeing these current protests because white people all of a sudden woke up and said, oh, we've been horrible to Black people. Let's do something different. We're waking up to these protests because Black people are fed up. And they have been fed up and continue to be fed up. And they're raising their voices to make people aware of those things. And you're not going to fix these problems overnight, Joy. It's going to take a significant amount of time and effort. And that's if people are willing to do the hard work. I say that it's great that white people are woke right now. But I ask, are you going to get out of the bed and do the real work? Waking up is great. But are you going to be really willing to do the hard work of taking an honest look in the mirror and saying that, yes, America is a nation founded on racism, and then address those things moving forward to alleviate them?
Yeah. Well, Reggie Jackson, thank you as always for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing so much of your work.
Yeah, you know, it's a pleasure, Joy. I thank you every time you have me on. And, you know, my work as a head griot at America's Black Holocaust Museum, you know, that volunteer position, I've been talking about these issues literally for almost 20 years now. And, you know, I'll continue to talk about these issues in that capacity moving forward, because I think it's an incredibly important part of the repair and reconciliation that we need as a nation. So thank you for the opportunity.
Reggie Jackson is the head griot of America's Black Holocaust Museum and the co-founder and lead trainer of Nurturing Diversity Partners. You can find more of our previous conversations at wuwm.com.